Like Ms. Karen was setting me up for next week, like it needed to be a short sermon because we could all have Sundays once, you know, Pastor Mike's done talking. And if he could just, you know, finish it up, then we'll get Sundays faster. Well, maybe that's true. We do turn to a second reading from Exodus, chapter 16. We'll do verses 2 through 15. I think that'll do it for us. Yep. So this is on page 62 of your Pew Bible. The story to which Jesus and the disciples were referring to. Listen now for a word from God as it comes to us from Exodus chapter 16. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "I'm going to rain bread from heaven for you, and each day the people shall go out and gather enough for that day. In that way I will test them, whether they will follow my instruction or not. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather on other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you shall know that it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt, and in the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your complaining against the Lord. For what are we that you complain against us?" And Moses said, "When the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and your fill of bread in the morning, because the Lord has heard the complaining that you utter against him, what are we? Your complaining is not against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the Israelites, 'Draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining.'" And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites, they looked toward the wilderness, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, 'At twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God.' In the evening, quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew lifted, there was on the surface of the wilderness a fine flaky substance, as fine as frost on the ground. When the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, 'What is it?' For they didn't know what it was. Moses said to them, 'It is the bread that the Lord has given you to eat.'" The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. We say that a lot. Let us pray. Almighty God, we give you thanks for this time together. Help us do something good with it in Christ's name. Amen. Well, school has started, and we've had a full week of it, and are we used to it? Are we getting used to it? Well, our boys they've started new schools. Liam starts a new school tomorrow, and this is an interesting thing, and Elizabeth and I are now indoctrinated into the world of carpools. We are in the carpool. Liam did not understand what a carpool was. We looked at a lot of pictures of carpools online. Do you know how many pictures there are of swimming pools that have a car crashed into them? Tons of them. Tons of them. We did find some cars that someone had lined with a plastic liner and turned into a swimming pool. That, we liked that a lot. We thought those carpools were awesome, but that's not what it is. We're driving carpool. I've driven carpool. I feel like I'm driving carpool right now. I'm not totally here. I'm still on four coming and going. But we're into it, and it reminded me, you know, this transition sort of reminded me of a time in my own life where I transitioned to a new school. I grew up in Ohio, as many of you know, and in Huber Heights, Ohio, there was a levee that did not pass, a tax levy that didn't pass in the ninth grade, when I was in the ninth grade. And a lot of people in the community felt kind of anxious about that. Some of the parents in my school got a little bit anxious, and they started to look at a private school to send their kids to. And I sort of really, I rode the wave of anxiety all the way out of the school I was in to a new school, because I was ready for something different. I like to do something different and change it up a little bit. And so I started at a new school, at a private school, and it was about 20 minutes away from the house, and so there was a little bit of carpooling going on. It was really a culture shock to me, though, because I had kind of gone through public school, and now this was a private Catholic school. So I had to spend a little bit of energy figuring out who the guy was that was hanging on a cross over every doorway. I'm embarrassed to tell you, it took me a month to figure out that that was Jesus and that that was a crucifix, because I grew up not Catholic, and crosses sort of looked like that cross. There's no body on it. And so I had to figure, oh, that's Jesus. I was very embarrassed about that. I've never said that before until just now. There were other things about the school that were culturally a little bit different, like we wore neckties every day. I'm wearing a long necktie today in honor of my Catholic high school education. You might have thought something was wrong, or that I was going to be asking you for money. Well, no. Stewardship's coming up in the fall. The fund drive's coming up, but that's not why. I was just thinking about how I wore a long necktie every day for 10th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade. And it was weird, because students came to school, and the boys, they didn't have their ties tied. They just kind of wore them around their necks, sort of like in a rebellious devil may care kind of way. And the 5 minute bell would ring at 8:10, and then you had 5 minutes to get in uniform and beat a class on time. So you'd see all the seniors, man, they had it made. So they walked in with their tie, and the 8:10 bell would ring, and they would kind of, I got 5 whole minutes, that's a lot of seconds, you know, I'm a math major, I can do this. So they'd walk, and eventually at about 8:14, they would tie the swiftest, fastest overhand knot and be perfectly dressed in uniform and walk in and sit down and, hey, how's it going, Sister Mary Alice? You'd see the freshmen tried to replicate this. It was painful. One little boy at 8:13 somehow managed to tie both of his hands. He was like a little prisoner. I'll never forget the kid that I saw him walking across the main way. He was late. He had his tie was tied sideways. Part of it was going over one part of the collar. The other was in. He was a mess. So I saw that and I thought, I don't think I can tie a tie like these guys can. I'm coming to school fully dressed, necktie in place. I'm not messing around. Because I was trying to get used to just being in a different school and how it's different. You know, people do things differently. I had an assumption that at this Catholic school, everyone would be committed to education, perhaps even committed to the religious life. Boy, was I sorely mistaken. I remember 10th grade biology started. It was first period class, so I had my tie tied. I was sitting in my seat. The bell rang at 8:15. And then at about 8:15 and 30 seconds, a kid walked into class. He's late. Now, are we recording today? We're okay. Are we successful? I got to put my glasses on to make meaningful eye contact with you, Tom. Are we recording? Okay, well then I won't tell you this kid's name. Because I have a feeling that he probably is the CEO of a company. Or he's in jail. Or he's on his way from one to the other. I really don't know. But let's just call him Creedmoor Fleener. Because that's a fun name. And Creedmoor Fleener was a member of my church in Kentucky who has passed on. But I love saying the name Creedmoor Fleener, and this story will allow me to say that a few more times. So let's call this guy Creedmoor Fleener. So Creedmoor Fleener walks in at 8:15 and 30 seconds. And our biology teacher, Miss Jones, I don't know if it was her first year, but I know it was her last. Didn't go well for Miss Jones in biology, in first period biology. He walked in, went back to his seat. Miss Jones said, "Creedmoor, you're late." And he said, "What? What?" That was sort of his approach to everything, was this incredulous, "What, me?" You know. And she wrote him a demerit. That was how the school worked on demerits. And after 10 demerits, you were suspended. And after 15 demerits, you were expelled. Well, I lived in fear of that until Creedmoor Fleener had chalked up about 18 of them and was still coming around. I figured, okay, that's how that rule works. It's not real. I didn't know. You know, you never know what's, you know, it's a culture thing. What rules do we abide by and what rules do we pretend to abide by? Just let me know what the rules are here. So anyway, Creedmoor Fleener, things would happen and poor Creedmoor Fleener got blamed for them. Most all of them were his fault. Sometimes they weren't. Like when Missy took a handful of pennies, and while Miss Jones was writing about meiosis or mitosis on the chalkboard, I don't really know which one because I never learned it because of all the things that happened in biology class. When Missy took a handful of pennies and threw them at the chalkboard, after Miss Jones climbed back into her skin, she turned around and she yelled, "Creedmoor Fleener!" And he said, "What? What?" Because that's what he said. Well, it was another day in biology class, and Miss Jones was, bless her heart, trying to tell us about the dissection that we would be doing next week. She's trying to tell us about the dissection. Maybe it was the next day or something, and we were all excited, and things were kind of building up. There was a tension in the classroom, and Creedmoor had already gotten in trouble enough that she actually made him sit on the back kind of counter. Our biology classroom had the lab space around the periphery of the classroom, so there was a sink and maybe some space and like a Bunsen burner and some space and another sink and another burner. It kind of went around like that, an old, you know, I think it was probably, it seemed like a 1950s building to me. Flat roof, great idea. So Creedmoor had already gotten in trouble. He'd already done the whoa, and he got sent to sit on the back counter. Well, it took Creedmoor Fleener about 45 seconds to realize that he was sitting within arm's reach of the 5-gallon bucket filled with frogs. And he had that smile that only someone named Creedmoor Fleener could have. It took us, the rest of the class, about 45 seconds to realize that Creedmoor Fleener had realized he was sitting next to a 5-gallon bucket of frogs. And then poor Miss Jones, bless her heart, whatever she was talking about, you know, this is how you identify the liver, or make sure you don't fling frog guts around, or whatever she was saying, I don't know what it was, because we were all watching Creedmoor Fleener. And he was kind of edging that bucket a little bit closer to the edge of the counter he was sitting on. And we would look, and he would edge, and we would look, and he would edge, and we would look, and he would edge, and we would look, and he would edge. And of course, you get to the tipping point where gravity, which I guess is a science thing, I wouldn't know, I wasn't paying attention, gravity kind of takes hold. And the sound of a 5-gallon bucket filled with frogs that are not having their best day sort of just crashes and sloshes, and the sound of all that beautiful formaldehyde just spreads across the classroom so fast. And the sound was amazing, but the smell, oh, the smell was not delicious. It's good that this was first period. That just happened in a split second. And Miss Jones whirled around, and she said, "Creedmoor Fleener!" And he said, "What?" Like, it wasn't him. I don't know why you keep playing. It's probably Missy. She threw the pennies. Well, I think about that word, that "what?" I mean, it's a question, but it's not really a useful question, is it? And the Israelites were a little bit like that. If we turn to our Pew Bible, what I like about the Pew Bible, I sort of say some mean things about the Pew Bible, so let me talk it up a little bit. say some nice things about it. What's nice is that the editors have given us sort of section headings, and so you can kind of familiarize yourself with what's happened pretty quickly, right? So in Exodus, you've got the Israelites are oppressed, and then it says the birth and the youth of Moses, and that Moses flees to Midian, and Moses is at the burning bush, and God's divine name is revealed, and Moses has some miraculous power, it says. Moses returns to Egypt, and there's the whole bricks without straw scene, and you just kind of go through what's happened, and you get the plagues, and there's some frogs in there, and they probably are doing a little better than the frogs in my story, at least for a while, and flies, and boils, and all sorts of good stuff, and the final plague, and then the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the crossing of the Red Sea, and then you have in Exodus chapter 15, the song of Moses, which is really probably the song of Miriam, his sister. And then we're out in the wilderness, and we have chapter 16. So we kind of fast forward through all that stuff. And they're complaining. And they complain. And I love how Miss Karen sort of highlighted that, you know, when we're really hungry, none of us have really been hungry, but if you get hungry enough, your stomach will complain. It will murmur or grumble. And then you will become hangry, which is hungry and angry together, right? So the Israelites are hangry. And they complain, and it says that seven different times. They're complaining and complaining and complaining. And I love that line, if only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread. I don't know what a flesh pot is necessarily, but I assume that's probably like how in The Grapes of Wrath, Granny is always making side meat. I don't know what side meat is, but I would like to eat it, especially when she cooks it. That's just my thing. But anyway, so you don't have to join me on that at all. So they're complaining. Oh, we had it so good when we were in slavery. And they're complaining. And they're complaining a lot. And Moses says to them, that the Lord is going to give you quail and give you bread because he's heard your complaining. He says, what are we? What? What are we? That you complain against us. You're not complaining against us. You're complaining to God. What? Then he says it again. What are we? Your complaining is not against us, but against the Lord. And so if you go down to verse 15, it says, when the Israelites saw it, they said to one another, what? What is it? Right? And yours has a G, a little G. If you look in the footnotes there, just across the gully and down. G, or it is manna. What is it? It's what it is. What's that? It's called what? Manna. Manna, man who. There's a kind of a play on words there. So it's called manna because we can't think of what to call it. We don't know what it is. It's what? We eat what? What? Yeah, that's right. This is a little bit like proto who's on first. Yes, the fella's name. So I've always loved that, and you can look online, what is manna? And people will spend a lot of time telling you what manna is. They don't know. They'll tell you, oh, it's something that you grind. Oh, no, it's something that you just pick. You don't have to grind it. Well, no, actually what it is, and it's, I checked out when they used the word excretion. I was done. Yeah. I closed that. I don't need that word in my life. Some people don't like the word moist. I'm not a fan of the word excretion. I don't care what's doing anything. I'm out. I'm checking out. I was like, what? That was my moment of what, and I flipped the computer down and took a walk. But people don't know what manna is, and they didn't know either, and that's the point. It's what. And you can say what in an incredulous way, and it's not helpful, and that's what old Creedmoor Fleener did. What? I can't believe you're choosing me. I'm a terrible kid, and I should be either a felon or a CEO. I can't believe you're picking on me. What? You can ask it in an incredulous way, or you can say what what is this amazing thing that's happened to us? I can't believe that we cried out to God in slavery and God remembered us and heard our voice and has redeemed us from slavery and guided us and given us a name to be his people and given us a law and given us this relationship, this covenant relationship. I can't believe it. God is feeding us with quail and whatever this is. He's nourishing us. I can't believe what has happened. Questions, even the same question, can be better or worse, can keep us stuck, or it can lead us to transformation. I'm afraid that there's somebody that I tell you about too often. I don't think I've told you about it for at least 6 months, which makes me think that some of you have forgotten and you'll forgive me. But there's a book that I had to read. I had to read it in school. And the guy's name is kind of a cool name. His name is Peter Block. Like Peter Block. That sounds made up, like he's in a witness protection program or something. But his name is Peter Block. And he's a community organizer, but it's not what you think. He's an okay guy. And if you want more certification, he lives in Cincinnati, and I bet he likes five-way chili. So he wrote this book called Community, The Structure of Belonging. And he says really interesting things like, the small group is the unit of transformation. Oh, interesting. We kind of jive with that. We remember Christ care groups in the church, and we're all kind of part of small groups, and we're working on the shepherding group. So we understand maybe this idea that the small group is a powerful tool for change and for identity and for community. That makes sense. And Peter Block says things like, questions are way more powerful than answers. Answers shut things down, but questions open things up and create space and possibility. And Peter Block believes that there are five important conversations that we all have to be a part of. The first is possibility. Then the next is ownership. The next is dissent. Then there's a commitment. And finally, there's gifts. And he has some really great what questions associated with each of those. And I know I've told the Sunrisers about this before, and I'm sure I've told you too, but we'll just tell each other again. The possibility conversation is great. He asks, what is the crossroads you are faced with at this point in time? Do you sense that you're at a crossroads in your life? Where is that? What's that between, you know? Think of Tom Hanks at the end of Castaway. He's right there at the intersection. I think at the beginning too, it's great. Where is this crossroads in which you find yourself? Can you describe that? That's about possibility and what could happen that you would be passionate about. When it comes to ownership, he's got a great question. What is the story about this community that you find yourself telling most often? When people ask you about First Presbyterian Church, what do you say? What's the story that you sort of launch into about this church, about this congregation? And then, what do you get from that story? And, this is the scary part, how does that story hold you back? Oh, that gives us a lot of anxiety. But that's the moment where you can lean into transformation. Then the dissent conversation, right? Dissent, disagreement. What doubts do you have? What reservations do you have? What have you said yes to that's not true anymore? What have you said yes to that's no longer true? Now, I think that's a very powerful question for us in the church, because we like to say yes, we don't like to say no. We say yes, and we just kind of keep doing it and keep doing it. And then eventually we realize, after years of doing the same kinds of things, being in the same volunteer in the same spot, we realize my yes is no longer a yes, it's a no. And I don't know how to say it, and I don't know who to say it to, right? Am I talking to the right people? Or? Then there's the commitment conversation. What promises are you willing to make? What promises are you willing to make? And what is the cost to others if you make those promises or fail to make those promises? And then the last conversation, which is often the most challenging because we have to be vulnerable, is the conversation surrounding gifts. What is it about you that no one else knows? What is something you're good at that no one else knows about? You have been dying for someone to ask you to share this gift, but nobody ever has. Nobody ever has because nobody knows. What is the gift that you are kind of holding in the wilderness that is time to bring out of the wilderness? And what would that mean for the community if you did that? Or, another great one, is what has someone in this congregation or even in the small group that you're a part of, what have they done for you that has meant so much? And you've never said that. What's the thank you that you could offer? See, these are all what questions. And they're what questions that are incredible. Because you almost can't believe what would happen if you asked them. You could ask these questions. And transformation could happen individually, and even in your small group, the group that you're with, and even in the congregation, whole congregation. And transformation is scary. It's a lot easier just to say, what's that? What? It's easier to stick with those kinds of what questions. Now, to be fair, we have both of those sets of questions happening all the time. We're sort of stuck in between incredulity and incredible. We're sort of murmuring in the desert and meditating on the way. We're both of those things. And the challenge for us, friends and neighbors, is to move along with the faithful Israelites, to move along, to pick up that bread from heaven, and to become more like the one who said, I am the bread of life. That's our challenge. And that's what's transformative. And that's what's what about what?